Ma is gone. I fought back tears, gripping the handle of the wheelbarrow tighter so her body wouldn't tip out too soon. I was taking her to the river to join the other villagers who had passed. I didn't dare look around. What if one of those bodies had surfaced, caught on a rock instead of being swept away by the current after the last rains? I could almost picture the head of some weeks dead villager bobbing up beside me, all sunken cheeks and lifeless eyes behind paper-thin lids. I was surprised that even at the end, Ma's face looked plump and her cheeks soft. Her belly was swollen, but the rest of her body was all shriveled skin and knobby bones. She seemed peaceful in death, so different from her constant bitterness when she had been alive and starving. We arrived at the riverbank, both of our clothes sodden from the rain. My hands kept slipping as I tried to tip out my load. I'd found the wheelbarrow beside one of the many barren fields along the path, likely used for this very purpose and then abandoned. Finally, I heaved it to the side and took a few moments to arrange Ma's hands on her chest so it looked like she was sleeping, even in the stench of rotten decay. She would stay here until the tide came in and the river carried her out to sea. Ma's last moments had been fitful. She had been in bed for over a week, unable to even lift her head to take a sip of water. I tried spooning it into her mouth, but it dribbled down the side of her face. She'd been too frail to even swallow. It was unlike her. She was usually all angry energy, like a monsoon. I had expected her last breaths to be big, powerful, that Ma would be loud and forceful even in her passing. That was 3 days ago. I knew I had to take Ma's body to the river, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. It meant pushing the loaded wheelbarrow down to the riverbank on my own because no one in the village was strong enough or willing to help me. Maybe it was because it was too final. If I took her to the river, it would mean she would never again get up and make thin congee for breakfast, that she would never again sift through our meager rice flour rations to pick out the worms, never again shout my name in a fit of rage as she chased me out of the house, feather duster raised high above her head, ready for a lashing. So Ma's body had stayed on the bed, her head rolling to one side like she was just resting. For the first night, I kept thinking she would cough up again, that she would come back to me in a wheezing, hacking fit. My hands slipped again as I pushed the wheelbarrow back up the muddy bank, leaving Ma's body behind. I struggled to dislodge the stuck wheel, throwing all my weight behind it. At 11, I was small for my age, having hit my growth spurt just as the famine was taking hold. For 3 years, it seemed like my body had been trapped in its own prison. I was always hungry, my stomach grinding itself raw. I hadn't dared complain to Ma or Ba. We were all starving. Everyone in the village was. Ma did her best to make a meal out of anything she could find. While I foraged for mollusks and snatched at tiny minnows along the shore, she made meals from wild plants and even the barks and roots from the nearby trees. The villagers had grumbled under their breaths when the cadre made the official party announcement. The cause for our nation's suffering has been 3 years of natural disasters. The cadre was the official head of our village, placed there by the Communist Party to execute the orders of Chairman Mao Zedong. A few years ago, the entire village was talking about the Great Leap Forward, delivering glory to China. Now, the cadre had a new term for it. The lack of food, the hunger, the starving, and finally the dying, like everything else, the party had a name for it. 3 years natural disaster.